I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold. There is so much we can do to impact climate change. And yet, while some people at the forefront of the climate conversation are racing ahead to find solutions, there are millions more who remain completely disengaged. We, as a human species, are facing extinction. And that's not a small little issue. If we're going to make a difference, we are going to need a lot of people to participate. And that's why this week we are talking about Extinction Rebellion.
Extinction Rebellion is a global movement to get the world's governments to address the climate and ecological emergency. Its decentralized structure has allowed the movement to grow incredibly quickly and attract participants of all backgrounds. We're speaking with Christina C., one of XR's core organizers in New York City. To learn more about this movement, here's Christina.
I'm Christina C. from Extinction Rebellion. I'm one of the core organizers. I got involved with Extinction Rebellion about 2 years ago, right when it started. And it started in the UK in about November of 2018 and very quickly kind of exploded around the world. And here in New York City, we got started around the middle of December. And it kind of just took off. Within a month, we were doing a huge action at Rockefeller Center. And it brought in a ton of people who've really never been kind of in the activist space before, which I think is a really interesting part about Extinction Rebellion. It brings in people from all walks of life, you know, across the political spectrum. And the way that I got involved in XR was I saw media coverage of XR in the UK, and it was people basically using nonviolent direct action, which is a form of civil disobedience, using their bodies to get people to pay attention. So you had people gluing their hands to doors, to government offices in the UK. You had people like stopping traffic, kind of making a bit of a scene. And the great part about XR is that it is very much based in like strategic action and artful creativity. So it's, you know, if you look at pictures of XR's actions or go to an XR action, it's full of color and life and music. So it really brings in a more kind of collective feeling to it. There's a lot of families involved, all sorts of things.
Can you give us a sense of why it appeals to such a cross section of people, of no matter their political beliefs or backgrounds?
Yeah, I would say the reason why a lot of people are attracted to it is it has simple demands. The demands of XR are tell the truth, carbon net zero by 2025, which I know everyone is like, oh my God, that's, you know, how is that ever going to happen? And the third demand is around citizens' assemblies. And citizens' assemblies are really a direct democracy tool that's used in places. It's been used in Ireland around controversial subjects that the government may not want to take on. There's been climate citizens' assemblies that have happened and taken place in France. In the UK, I think it's just ended. And really what happens with these is that it's made up of a representative body of, you know, whatever the locale is. So whether it's a city or a state or an entire country, it's representative of the entire country. So it's using a sortition method. And so then it's representative of the populace. And they basically are given information from professionals, from scientists, from people who really know, you know, the information. And then there's a deliberative process that's facilitated. And many of the outcomes of these citizens' assemblies have been far more radical than politicians would ever agree to do, because there would be backlash from voters. So it really brings in this level where you can get much more accomplished because there's more people who are willing to take action. And in the U.S., we added a demand around climate and ecological justice specifically, to really, you know, take into account everything that's happened in this country in the past. So really, I think the citizens assembly aspect is the revolutionary aspect in it all. And, you know, I think that's much more well known in the in Europe and is growing in the U.S. and other places in the world.
So when you speak about carbon neutral by 2025, that's obviously a tremendous amount of behavioral change, policy change, governmental leadership change potentially. How does XR go about those specific advocacy movements, or, you know, rather than just the colorful and vibrant things we see, what is it in the back office? How is it working out?
Yeah, so if you look at the IPCC report from the UN, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change from the UN that came out in 2018, it says we have until 2030 to really change things and turn things around. And so we can't wait until 2030. We really have to start taking action now so that all of the systems are in place. So by 2030, we can really deal with and have kind of grown into that. And so from the stance of what XR is talking about is, we around the world, we've helped to get cities passing, legislation acknowledging the climate emergency. And that's kind of step one, right? Like if you have a problem, you have to first acknowledge the problem and before you can really take action. And so that's like the first step that XR really started with from a legislative standpoint. And we got that passed here in New York City about a year ago in June. And it was the largest city in the world to pass a climate and ecological emergency declaration. So XR doesn't really sign on to specific legislation about like even the Green New Deal, because even the Green New Deal isn't saying like the timeline on it is, you know, in our opinion, not nearly enough. And so kind of they're saying carbon net zero by 2030, New York State saying carbon net zero by 2050. So, you know, we stick with 2025, and at the core of what we are pushing for is getting binding citizens assemblies happening.
There's this one character of Extinction Rebellion which really interests me a lot, is the decentralization, or the decentralized way you organize. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think this is a really interesting aspect to XR. It's both good and sometimes a bit frustrating at the same time. Because it's an all-volunteer organization, you have tons of people coming in who have skills that they want to give and time that they want to give. And there's been amazing things created. The flip side of that is that you also have, you know, like time constraints, or maybe you don't have the people who have the specific skills you need for something at that time. But what has happened is, you know, very quickly it is created in this decentralized way. I think there's over 1,100 groups around the world in 70 countries. And basically a group can form as long as they adhere to the three demands that are known globally and the 10 principles. And basically the 10 principles are, you know, fairly neutral, like no blaming and shaming, being decentralized, this kind of thing. And so it kind of allows it to kind of self-organize. And in many ways, it's, you know, what in a certain country, they may, I think France added a fourth demand based in biodiversity. And in the US, as I said, we added a demand on climate justice. So, you know, each group can kind of decide a bit on their own, what is needed in their area. So, I mean, it's amazing the things that you can do when things are decentralized and theoretically lack bureaucracy. That's kind of the whole theory. On the other hand, sometimes it's like, you know, it's just like, I just want a little bit more organization. That would be great. From just a standpoint of like everyone being on the same page and all of that kind of stuff.
It has some resonance with kind of the Occupy movement in some ways. It feels a little like that. And unfortunately, the Occupy movement, while it did change the conversation, it really didn't actually change the legislation. And I'm very interested to see, for example, how would XR have an impact on the biggest polluters, like large corporations and the oil companies? Are there specific actions targeting those particular bad actors?
Yeah, I mean, the great part about decentralization is that people can take on all sorts of actions. So in New York and Washington, D.C., XR groups have taken actions that are specifically targeting the media, right? Because the media plays a huge role in how we all understand and know and really see who those bad actors are. And so we've done a lot within New York. The New York Times, maybe you don't know this, but the New York Times used to sponsor the Oil and Money Conference. And so due to our actions, they pulled out of the Oil and Money Conference as a sponsor. And so, you know, when you start thinking about it from that level, how can you assume that the media is fairly, you know, talking about these issues when they are getting advertising money from fossil fuel companies, right? Like, it really doesn't make any sense. So, you know, we can focus on media, also focusing on banks that are funding fossil fuels. So it's not just about getting the government to do these things and take action. It's really about, you know, getting the media to take action, businesses to take action, and also as individuals. Like, you know, there's a lot we can do ourselves, but let's also realize that it's not just us. It really takes kind of the entire capitalist society to take action.
You said tell the truth, and that came up before in the way I think you said why people like families and more engaged citizens kind of from all like the spectrum of society kind of joined or is joining Extinction Rebellion. So tell the truth for me is of course very important, but what is the truth, you know? And then there is so much out there, especially like in the political nonsense at the moment in this arena, which is going where I think a lot of people are confused. What is actually the truth? And the truth is, I guess, that we are going to extinct. And when I hear that we still have time, 2030, you know, whatever the UN kind of says, I think from what I've made research on is that the point of no return was around 2010. So what is the truth for Extinction Rebellion?
Yeah, I mean, I think XR in itself is resonating with so many people because, you know, 2 years ago, there was no one really talking at that timeline, right? And I think it was something that, you know, for me personally, I didn't realize just how big of a hole there was. You know, I kind of felt like, yeah, I'm supporting environmental movements or, you know, NGOs and that kind of thing, but there's still this huge gap between seeing images of, you know, polar bears alone on a floating iceberg and that kind of thing, to really being able to take tangible action. And so I think, you know, from the standpoint of what is the truth? Well, we know what the truth is. The science is telling it to us and has been for a long time. It's a matter of us paying attention to it. So it's not, we don't need anyone to, at this point, like tell us what the truth is. We just need to actually listen to what the scientists are saying. And in many ways, they're saying the science actually hasn't caught up with where we really are, and kind of what action needs to be taken.
Well, I clearly believe very much in science, you see. But then I also heard, I mean, I'm kind of provoking you a little bit here. I'm sorry, Christine. But I just heard on television, you know, that we just need to clean up the forests in California and hence there would be no fires anymore. So how do you make a distinction of truth? Yeah, who do you believe?
I mean, it's very hard in this time, you know, because there is kind of a pushback on science and there's, you know, I don't think we quite give enough weight to the fact that people are purposely putting out misinformation or pushing back against science or saying, oh, well, it's not human caused. It really doesn't matter because, you know, whatever we want to talk about with the election, the climate and ecological crisis is still going to be there on the other side of it, right? So it's gonna, whether people believe in kind of, you know, the truth, as science is calling it now, eventually it's going to affect us all, you know, and we don't really have to look at anything but extreme weather or, you know, crops going, you know, completely south. It's really hard to message it in a way that people understand that this massive global scale of something this big, how do you internalize that? You know, that's a big, huge thing that we really work on within XR is like, how do you get someone to really care? And through just doing talks and, you know, this Heading for Extinction talk is the XR talk, so to speak. And it takes you through, you know, the first step is acknowledging it. And part of that comes with, you know, a process of grief maybe for some people.
I think there's another layer of challenge here. And that is I think we are coming to an agreement about the truth of the problem, but I don't think we have agreement about the truth of the cause. And I think that's really the challenge that we grapple with on Pot of Gold and with Game Changers is the cause really is the way we've structured our economic system. That's really, it's not the fact that people, you know, pollute and use gas. That's kind of business as usual, but it's the drive to sell more gas and use more, you know, more toxic chemicals because that actually feeds the corporate hunger for profit and also the stakeholder hunger for that corporation to profit. And so there's this vicious circle and a big disconnect between we as people who own pieces of corporations, we as people who buy consumer products, and we as people who hate climate change, right? And so I think it's that causal link, perhaps, that I'm interested to know. You mentioned capitalism, right? Right off the bat. How do you think the majority of XR participants feel about the root causes of climate change?
So I'm not speaking for all of XR right now, but, you know, I've been getting very deep into donut economic theories. I don't know if you guys have read.
We know Kate Raworth. She was one of our first guests.
Amazing. So, I mean, from that perspective, I think, you know, that's personally where I think we need to head is how do we rethink our systems and actually make them useful for us and, you know, so that we are living within planetary boundaries, because that is really, you know, the fact that we kind of think that there's an unending, you know, supply of every resource and it's fine that we just consume it all. You know, it just shows how disconnected we really are from how we are living, you know, and you could say the same thing about, you know, our food system, right? We're so disconnected from what it takes to grow food that it doesn't even register in our minds how much we consume and what it took to make it. So from the standpoint of capitalism, I think it's really, you know, it's becoming clearer and clearer, and people are really starting to realize this all over in every sector. When you have McKinsey and the Pentagon and all of these different, you know, sectors coming out with studies on how climate change will affect their sector, you start to see like, well, what are their answers to it? Is it, you know, technology will save us? Is it, what is it that we're going to do going forward? And I think that to have a healthy economy in the way that we've come to realize it, we really need to shift how we think of the economy. And it can't just be about endless growth. It really needs to be about, you know, does this suffice for my, you know, way of life? And realizing that we are consuming as the US far more than the rest of the world.
Yeah, hear, hear. I mean, that disconnection really is between your behavior and the impact of that behavior. It goes through many filters, many economic filters that you don't always see, right? Once you start to see it, you can act. But then it's where to act, and that's what XR is, why it's important, because we can act together, right? Is that right?
Yeah, and I guess it's not just good enough to go vote, but then at the same time, a lot of people don't go vote. Yeah, super frustrating.
Yeah, there's a lot of anger and division and all of these things around our political system today. You know, and we can, there's plenty of things wrong with democracy as we know it in the US, but it also is a system that is one of the, you know, the better in the world, as far as voting and, you know, not that we're not seeing a lot of kind of shutting down of voting places and all of these other things. But really, I think we in this country take for granted what we have from a democratic standpoint. And I think that that's where, you know, we do need to vote, but we also need to push even more and really get into after the election. So it's not just like, the next month. The next month is super critical, but also what happens after, no matter who's in the White House, because there's still a ton of work that needs to be done. And so I think that's where we kind of keep going back to citizens' assemblies as XR, is how do we really push that, because it's community, you know, it's based in the community, whatever scale that is. And so I think that's where we really need to look even further than the election, because, you know, I think we're all kind of steeped in dread and fear and holding our breath, at least I am, at the moment. And, you know, we need to start looking at the future as not this kind of dread-filled place, and really, like, there's a lot of creativity and imagination that can come, you know, out of it and go into it to build something that we want to see that's sustainable.
As a European, to see the US election, and I can't participate in the US election, but in a way, we are influenced and impacted by it. So I do think it has a tremendous impact who's going to be in the White House in November. And it's sometimes a little bit frustrating to me to see that, like, I think sometimes America, to me, feels so, in a way, disconnected, how much impact that election actually has worldwide. Still, you know, I mean, you know, and in this point of time, how important it is to change things. And this is why I love Extinction Rebellion so much. And so maybe you could talk about the vision, like, what if, what is it that Extinction Rebellion wants to achieve in the next 5 years?
Well, I think it would be great to achieve all of our demands and get everyone realizing and acknowledging the truth, you know, and just saying, okay, yes, this is happening. How do we adapt to it? Because we're past the point of completely mitigating it. You know, so sea levels are going to rise, heat is going to, you know, shift. And so I think what XR at its core is about, and it's, you know, regardless of the demands and principles, it's really about how do we come together and, you know, see each other as human beings again and realize that, like, we are not all, like, recognizing our similarities rather than our differences, and really just, like, reseeding that humanity amongst all of us, because we just, you know, need to see each other differently and realize, as you said, like, I think the US is fairly insulated from how they see the rest of the world. I don't think that they really see how we impact the rest of the world.
Yeah, I love what you're saying.
So one of the things we like about Extinction Rebellion so much is how accessible you are and how easy it is to get involved. Could you just tell our listeners what they need to do, where they need to click, just to show up at one of the events or just get involved?
Sure. You can go to our website at xrebellion.nyc, and that's the New York City chapter, which is the largest in the U.S., and we have a lot going on. So if there's people that want to start chapters and get involved in that way, you know, there's chapters all along the East Coast that are all working together now as well. And then if you want to get involved and see if you're not in this area, you can go to rebellion.global, and that is the global site. And on there, you'll find a map of existing groups all over the world. And there'll also be a lot more information. But, you know, check out the xrebellion.nyc for a lot of information.
Do you want to say something, Christine, or like really, which is like really close to your heart, like a message, maybe, because it is really important times?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is like the last year has been a roller coaster, and it's had an effect on our psyches collectively and individually. And I think that, you know, with COVID, with everything that's happening in the US, it kind of seems like it's an endless kind of, what are we doing? How are we going to move forward? But really what I continue to think about is, you know, this thinking of courage and having courage to face all of these things, and also having a bit of optimism that, you know, things will work out, but they're not going to work out unless we all take action to make them happen.
Fantastic. Yeah, this is actually opening a huge, like for me, quite a huge discussion, you know, like what you just said. It really resonated with me because it is courage to actually face extinction. And once you thought about what that means to go extinct, and if things continue the way they do, we are seriously facing extinction worldwide. It makes my soul really sad. And that courage, I think that would be a whole new conversation. Yeah, but thank you for saying it. It's so true.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You know, for a two-year-old movement, it's actually grown incredibly quickly, right? And I think addressing inequity and climate change requires a full court press. In other words, there's no single solution, and it's going to require every person in every walk of life to do what they can do, whatever it is. And so I think Extinction Rebellion really makes it easy to engage, and engages a lot of people, a very broad swath of people. And the real challenge is translating that energy into actionable, difference-making behavior and policies and rules and structures and all the things that make society run. And I think that that's where the proof is in the pudding, as you hate for me to say, that when people get involved, you know, will this translate into moving the needle? And I really want it to work.
Let's take the example of Greenpeace, right? Which is the largest worldwide environmental organization. And I can talk through my own youth in the 80s. And Greenpeace was an accelerator, I think, for actually changing policy, actually founding the Green Party in Europe. And so there was a lot of action. I mean, they were pretty extreme street actions, such as chaining yourself on the tracks of nuclear disposal plants, or climbing up chimneys, or occupying ships in the North Sea against overfishing and all that kind of stuff, right? And quite frankly, Greenpeace pointed to where the problem is. Like nuclear power, they have warned us in Europe, nuclear power isn't safe. And then, you know, Chernobyl happened. And I do remember this moment where when Chernobyl happened, right, where all Europe was affected by nuclear rain. All of a sudden, people were like, okay, yeah, Greenpeace was actually right. Even my own family, you know, and it shifted, Mel, into making my own dad giving another party a vote.
I agree that the public engagement is really important. The question is, how do you channel it in a way that's constructive and that actually makes change?
Well, I mean, if you read one of the latest email alerts I got from Extinction Rebellion is, Stephanie, humanity is at crisis, you know, very clear, very direct. The year 2020 has proven that our current political, social, and economic systems are not designed to handle unpredictable shocks. Government leaders resort to short-term solutions that focus on surviving immediate threats, which unfortunately have ramifications for years or even decades. This is why we need the government to act now on the climate and ecological emergency. You can't have a, you know, clearer communication what needs to be done.
Right. So that's why
the question is draft the legislation, get the for. How?
Right. Exactly. Right? It's always comes down to the how. I mean, the idea of the citizens' assemblies is really cool because it does engage people in lawmaking at a certain level. Although it's not the real legislature, it does give ammunition to politicians to move forward with that legislation as though they had a consensus. And I think that's a very positive move.
We're an independent, listener-supported podcast.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul.
Support us by rating this episode and sharing with all your friends.
And to learn more, join us at potofgold.world.
I'm Stephanie Overbach.
And I'm Mel Wymore. Thanks for listening.